We got one more guest here for this Wednesday edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is Wes Reynolds, at Wes Reynolds, the number one on Twitter. Wes, how's it going today, man?
Hey, Adam. How are you doing this morning?
Doing very well, bud. Appreciate the time as always here, sir. Thank you so much for joining me. And, you know, I'm crowdsourcing opinions here this week on the NFC and the AFC championship games. So that's where we'll start with you here, Wes. Game 3-11, 3-12, Rams on the road in New Orleans take on the Saints. 2 o'clock local time kickoff, 12 o'clock body time kickoff for the Rams. Saints, 3.5-point favorites.
Yeah, this line, I mean, it's pretty much, I think, going to move back and forth all week between 3.5 and 3 with some juice. You know, I think maybe some sharper guys or just pure numbers guys are going to, you know, maybe gravitate toward the Rams at 3.5. But, I mean, I'm wondering, you know, we saw the Rams run through the Cowboys. I mean, I had the Rams last week, but even I didn't expect them to just decimate the Cowboys on the ground. And they really did. But this week they're actually playing, you know, we don't think of the Saints as some great defensive team, but they're actually the number one rush defense in the NFL. And you wonder if the Rams, I mean, it was kind of the story of the game back in week 9 where the Saints really jumped out on them. Now, the Rams were able to come back, but they had to do it through the air. And, you know, the Saints getting out to a lead, which they did not do last week, really was, I think, one of the keys to stopping that Rams running game. And, I mean, it wasn't just Gurley. Gurley numbers, and I don't think his knee is totally 100%. You know, he's effective enough, but it was really Anderson that did the damage last week. But I don't know if it's going to be as easy for the Rams to run the ball as they did last week. So I haven't played the game. My lean would be to New Orleans. Total seems to have stabilized a little bit and gone back down a little bit from that initial move to the over, and that could just be people playing unders, you know, in a big conference championship game. But you know, I would expect New Orleans to probably really focus on getting on a better start or getting out to a better start, which they did not do last week, and they found themselves down 14-0 pretty early. Now, didn't allow them to score the rest of the game. So you know, I think the Saints defense is actually a little bit better than they're given credit for, and I think the offenses are probably equal, but, you know, it's almost a win in doubt, go with the better defense. So I like the Saints in this one.
Well, and another thing that helps, I mean, I would say the Saints are an above average defense. And as you mentioned, you know, tops in the league in run defense, second in the league in yards per carry allowed. So they are pretty good in that facet of the game, which, you know, could play a significant role here in this one. But also, one of the best things for a mediocre defense is a good offense. And we saw the Saints play that ball control game last week against Philadelphia, you know, didn't let Nick Foles get into rhythm, didn't let that Eagles offense on the field a whole lot. I wonder if the game plan is the same here again this week. And, you know, obviously this would have side and total implications, but I sort of feel like, you know, you've got a guy here, you know, Sean McVay is the flavor of the week, the flavor of the month, really the flavor of the season in the NFL. I mean, everybody who's shaking the guy's hand has gotten a coach or coordinator position here this offseason. I think Dennis Allen did a really good job last week. I don't think there's a whole lot of respect out there for Sean Payton. Maybe there should be.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Sean McVay, you know, and he deserves a lot of the plaudits he gets in the media and in all the amongst the chattering class. But also, you know, I think the formula, you know, in terms of what these teams in the offseason that were looking to find new coaches, you know, we're clearly looking for a Sean McVay, but they're also looking for somebody that's maybe a wunderkind on one side of the ball and combining him with a veteran coach on the other side of the ball. And that's what they have in Los Angeles with him and Wade Phillips, who, you know, is a former head coach, not likely to be one again. I mean, you never say never, considering that Vic Fangio finally got his first shot to be at 2 years in Denver. But, you know, probably is going to be a defensive coordinator, and it's probably what he's been best at through his entire career. So, you know, I think that you're seeing that. But, I mean, you know, Sean Payton has been doing this for a long time in New Orleans, and maybe it's that bounty gate thing that they had with when Greg Williams was on the staff as the defensive coordinator that's kind of taken the bloom off the rose of Sean Payton. But, yeah, you know, he probably is getting a little bit ignored. And, you know, one thing that we've seen with him, he's a very aggressive coach. And, you know, he's going to go for the kill. I mean, you saw that in that first Eagles game in the regular season when they just, you know, they had a big lead and it was like, okay, we could take a foot off the gas and run the ball. And they weren't doing that at all. So, you know, I think, you know, maybe New Orleans, even as the favorite, kind of has a little bit of something to prove. And, you know, we saw it last week. Bettors kind of bet what they saw last. And they saw all these underdogs winning the wild card weekend. And a lot of them went to the window and bet them. And now they saw the Rams beat the Cowboys, who you had a fair amount of public support for. And the Saints, obviously, were the only favorite to not cover last weekend. So, you know, maybe it could be a little bit of an underappreciated favorite here, I guess, might be the best term for it.
All right, let's go to the AFC game here, New England and Kansas City. I'll ask you the same question I asked Brian here on our previous segment. Are you surprised to see Kansas City as a reduced juice 3-point favorite?
I am and I'm not. I mean, because I think they should be higher, and I do like Kansas City in this game. And hopefully it keeps going down so I could take a very cheap money line on Sunday, of which it really already is. But, you know, I'm not surprised that bettors are going to gravitate towards it simply because you have, you know, you're getting Tom Brady and Bill Belichick in points. And, I mean, there were two teams in the National Football League out of the 32 teams that were not underdogs in any game this year, and that was the Los Angeles Rams and the New England Patriots. And, you know, you're getting these guys in points in what, you know, very well could be their last hurrah. I mean, we never know. I mean, maybe, you know, Belichick's going to remain the coach, but maybe Tom comes back for another year or two. But, I mean, I think people kind of doubted the Patriots last week a little bit because there was a lot of support for the Chargers, not just in the tout or service advisory business, but people at the window, there was a lot of money line dog support. So, I mean, then you see the Patriots, even though it only ended up 13, I mean, they pretty much dominated that game and had a huge lead, and the Chargers kind of made it a little bit more aesthetically or cosmetically pleasing toward the end. But I think, you know, once sometimes when bettors get burned by a team or going against a team, and they say, well, this is just the vintage Patriots, you know, here they go again. And, you know, this is just what they do this time of year in January in the NFL playoffs. But, you know, so now they want to gravitate towards them. And I don't think that that's the right approach here. I think Kansas City, I mean, you have a coach in Andy Reid who I think is kind of unfairly dismissed as a guy that can't win the big game and that he's some kind of horrible coach. He's one of the best coaches in the league and has been for a really long time. And I mean, to get this small of a cheap favorite on Kansas City, I think is a good thing. And keep in mind, this Patriots team was 3-5 on the road this year. Five of their losses were to not necessarily the bad teams, but to non-playoff teams. They lost at Pittsburgh. They lost at Miami. They lost at Detroit. So they lost, you know, especially with like Detroit, Miami, they lost to some mediocre to bad teams on the road. So now they're going to all of a sudden go into Arrowhead Stadium where it's going to be like anywhere from 5 to 10 degrees at kickoff and just go easily win on the road. And I don't think so.
Oh, Tom Brady and the Patriots here an underdog for the first time since September 20th of 2015. So it's been a long time.
Wow.
I believe it's 68 straight games since the Patriots have been an underdog. And here they are. And like you said, I mean, not only do they deserve to be, I probably would look to go the Kansas City side here in this one. And this is after I really liked New England last week. You know, so, I mean,
yeah.
Look, it's – I think the thing about both of these games here is that people are going to bet them. Because they're out there, because they're the NFL playoffs. But these two numbers do look pretty sharp to me. And I think it's just a matter of, same thing as last week, sorting through what matters to you. Because we're going to talk about these two games on all five editions of Bang the Book Radio this week. They're all over ESPN, FS1, NBC Sports Network, the major networks, everything. Sort through all the noise, decide what matters to you, and also pay attention to what those influential people are doing in markets. These are two very, very detailed, nuanced, and complex handicaps.
Yeah, and I mean, you could even make an argument for last week as well. I mean, you really, theoretically speaking, could have made an argument for every single side of the eight teams last week, and a lot of people did. And you can do the same this week, especially now that you're down to the final four. And, I mean, you kind of saw that. And that stat that you brought up about New England, that is going to be brought up on all of these network on all of these telecasts, you know, whether it's ESPN or NFL Network or FS1, NBC Sports, whatever platform, Fox, that stat's going to be brought up that, oh, Tom Brady and Bill Belichick have not been an underdog since September 2015. I mean, you know, make no mistake, that's going to be brought up. And a lot of things with your casual bettors, the mainstream media that they watch throughout the week, I mean, you know, they may get, these shows may get made fun of on social media, but the First Takes and, you know, those type of shows and the NFL Lives and, you know, all of these shows, they do matter to some of these people when they go to the window. And they do influence them. They may not influence you and me and maybe some of the listeners, but they do influence a lot of bettors and can have an influence in the market. So I tend to like to play against that media perception.
All right, let's talk some college basketball here. And I know you're a Big Ten guy coming from Indiana, and we got a couple of Big Ten games here tonight. We got Penn State hosting Iowa. Iowa's won three in a row, Minnesota and Illinois as well. But I want to try to, at this time of the year, do some conference-by-conference breakdowns with our guests. On yesterday's show, talked Mountain West with Rolf Michaels. Today, we'll do the Big Ten with Wes Reynolds, and then, you know, we'll see what happens throughout the rest of the week here. But, Wes, Michigan, 17-0. They'll be the number one team now with Duke losing at home, assuming they don't trip up this weekend. Michigan State, 15-2. They're both of those teams, 6-0 in division play. Maryland, six in a row for them. They're 6-1 in Big Ten play. What do you feel about this conference here? I mean, obviously Michigan and Michigan State appear to stand out right now. What about the rest?
Yeah, I mean, it looks like, I mean, the way you kind of break this conference down is in the three quadrants, and the first quadrant and the bottom quadrant seem to be, or really breaking them down to three, seem to be kind of fairly well set. I mean, it looks like, you know, Michigan and Michigan State are clearly right now the class of the conference. Now, Michigan State's going through some injuries now with Joshua Langford, now Kyle Aaron's out for a little bit. But, you know, they keep putting the numbers on these teams, and these teams keep covering, and they keep winning by substantial margins. So they look to clearly be the top two teams. And then you look at the bottom four. Bottom four looks to be Penn State, Northwestern, Rutgers, Illinois, in whatever order you want to put them in, even though I do like Penn State tonight against Iowa. I mean, that's what, and I'll go to my main point here. You know, the teams 3-10 kind of seem to be a little bit of a muck. I think some are better than others, but there's not a great deal of separation. And you get, you know, different flavors of the month. It kind of looked like Ohio State and Indiana were, you know, maybe those next two teams that maybe could rise up to that top level and challenge the two schools from the state of Michigan. And then now Indiana's lost three straight. Ohio State's lost three straight. And now Maryland is on that streak now. So they look like the two teams that kind of look like the flavors of the month right now are Maryland and Iowa, you know, who are on the winning streaks. Iowa's won three straight after losing their first two in the conference. Nebraska finally got a win on the road, which they had not been able to do, at least early on in the Big Ten season, and kind of has struggled with in recent years, and got a pretty big win at Indiana and a very easy win. Winning by 15 and pretty much and really leading wire to wire. You know, we kind of dismissed Purdue because they didn't get any big non-conference wins, and they went to Michigan State and disappointed, but then they go to Wisconsin and win. They get an easy win against Rutgers last night. So now, you know,
And that's kind of, I think, how it's going to be a little bit in the Big Ten right now. If these two teams in Michigan kind of keep running away from the field, you know, where you're going to have teams that go on streaks, where it looks like a team's going to be dead, like it looks like right now after three straight losses that an Indiana or an Ohio State are dead in the water. But apparently, you know, eventually they're probably going to go on streaks, and then they're going to be a little bit back to form. And, I mean, you throw some other teams in there kind of like that, Minnesota as well. And, you know, there's so many teams in the conference now, and probably haven't mentioned one. But, I mean, you're going to kind of, I think, see that. I mean, and, I mean, like for Indiana, for example, there's a lot of panic right now in Hoosier Nation with this team. I'm like, well, I don't think this team's going to finish 10th in the Big Ten. Maybe they're not going to be third. I don't know. But they're in that muck with the majority of the conference right now.
So how do you handle that from a betting standpoint? I mean, Michigan is going to continue to get inflated numbers, and, you know, defensively they're fantastic. They've been better, I think, than people expected offensively in some respects. Michigan State with the injuries, you know, that should kind of temper their numbers a little bit. But how do you handle this conference then from a betting standpoint where we'll call it inconsistency, maybe it's parity, but that's the story for, you know, teams 4 through 12 basically.
Yeah, I mean, and I think, you know, you can't be afraid to, you know, take teams that are on losing streaks, and you can't be afraid to take those spots. I mean, they've now moved to favorite. They were open pick or maybe even plus one, but like a Penn State. And Penn State, you know, is clearly down, and clearly, you know, they probably have the most missed player in the conference in terms of having Tony Carr, who really, I mean, ran the show for them, and then, you know, elected to enter the draft early. So, I mean, you know, they clearly miss him, and they're clearly down. But, you know, they're in a good spot getting an Iowa team that's won three in a row. And, you know, an Iowa team that I think is a little better defensively this year, but they're still not great defensively. And they're still, you know, not a sure bet on the road. So, you know, I agreed with that move, and Penn State's move to a small favorite over a now ranked Iowa team. So, I mean, you know, you're going to see those. And a team like Penn State, even when they're, whether they're better or they're worse than they are, usually knocks off a ranked team or two in conference play every single season. So, I mean, you can't be afraid. I mean, it's tough to say that with Michigan and Michigan State because they keep covering numbers and they keep inflating them and inflating them, and they still keep getting past numbers. But, I mean, you know, sometimes I don't know if it's being stubborn or just sticking to a process, but eventually that happens. Eventually it happens where one of the premium teams that are on these huge runs are going to lose. And, you know, and I think that's eventually going to happen for Michigan and Michigan State. It's just kind of the tough part is figuring out the spot of where it's going to happen.
Well, and I think if you want a microcosm of the Big Ten, look at tonight's game in Champaign for Illinois as they host Minnesota. You've got a Minnesota team here, 13-3 on the season, 3-2 in conference play so far. An Illinois team just 4-12 on the season, 0-5 in Big Ten play so far. And tonight, they're only a 1.5-point home dog.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, because, I mean, Minnesota really, to me, hasn't beaten anybody good. I mean, they're a solid, decent team, but, you know, I don't know if they're as good as their record. And, I mean, the one thing about Illinois, I will say, and having watched them, is they keep trying. I mean, I don't think they've really mailed in any efforts. I mean, they didn't get the cover against Michigan, but they kind of hung near or right around the number for the most part. It's just, you know, circumstances, a possession or two don't go their way, and they don't get the cover, but they never really, I felt, got blown out. So, and that's why I think you're seeing these lines, because I think with a lot of these teams that are kind of in that muck of about 3 through 10, they don't know. You know, the market doesn't necessarily know, and it's still so early in this conference play, even though the Big Ten started with two games for each team in December and started their conference schedule early. You know, it's hard to measure where some of these teams, like right in the middle and kind of in that muck, are right now.
All right, let's talk golf for the last few minutes of the show here, because there are two tournaments I want to touch on. You know, first, I guess we'll start on the European Tour side, because that is the one that starts a little bit earlier here. So we go out to Abu Dhabi for the championship there, and, you know, a lot of strong players in this field of Brooks Koepka out there, Dustin Johnson out there, who, by the way, he's 13-1 over at Five Dimes for this tournament. You do not see Dustin Johnson's numbers at 13-1 for any PGA Tour tournament. So what's sort of your approach here out in Abu Dhabi?
Well, now, because the tournament has actually started already, much to my surprise, considering I did a write-up for the VSiN newsletter that we release on Wednesdays, and it started overnight, Tuesday night, Wednesday morning. So we're actually already through one round right now with Shane Lowry as the leader, shooting a 6-10 under. And, I mean, Dustin Johnson now, they've adjusted his odds. He did kind of start out poorly, but got it back to 3 under par, and Brooks Koepka is 5 under par, tied for 11th. But, you know, you got a lot of a different mix here of guys. Pablo Larrazábal, who has won this event before, is 3 back at 7 under. Louis Oosthuizen, who a lot of respected guys tipped for this tournament at -7. The guys I played Martin Keimer, was one of my guys. He's 4 back at 6 under, simply because he's got great pedigree here. He's won here 3 times. He's got 4 other top 6 finishes. So he's a guy that likes the Abu Dhabi Golf Club. So you've got a lot of guys. I mean, there's still some opportunities if you hadn't gotten in, if you're used to a European Tour event starting on Thursday and not starting this early. You know, you could still maybe get some live lines here. And, you know, scoring looks to be low. I mean, the primary defense on this course are bunkers, the 90 bunkers on course, and the wind. And doesn't look like the wind's blowing if somebody's shooting 10 under.
All right. Well, my mistake. I didn't know that tournament had started already. I'm used to the European Tour events starting on Wednesday. So my apologies for that. But again, you know, one of the things that Brian Blessing always talks about on the show, in tournament wagering, looking for some of those guys that are still in striking distance, you'll wind up with some good players that are a few shots off the pace. And then maybe you could take them heading into the second round or into the third round. Oh, hasn't started yet. The Desert Classic out in California. This used to be Bob Hope. Was the career builder. It's changed names a whole bunch of times. The challenging thing here about this one, Wes, the cut after 54 holes, because these guys all play a different course the first 3 days.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, if you look at this, the past performances of this event, last year you had a chalky winner with John Rahm winning this tournament. He's now, of course, the tournament favorite this year at anywhere about 6, 7, 8 to 1. You know, you have a couple interesting names that are at the, you know, the top of the favorite board. Justin Rose, who's never played this event, is deciding to play this event this year, and he's about 10 to 1. Now he is he's playing with some new equipment this year. So, I mean, I probably wouldn't take him that low, even though he's certainly capable of winning any tournament he's in. But, yeah, I mean, this is a, you know, you have three different courses here. You know, it's a little bit of a playing the PJ West Nicholas course, and the stadium course is really, I think, the best course of the three. But you've seen some chalky winners and some names win here before, like a John Rahm or Patrick Reed, but you've also had guys at longer shot prices like Hudson Swafford, who was one of my guys this week. He played very well at the Sony last week. Brian Gay, Mark Wilson, Johnny Vegas won his first event here, DJ Trahan. So you're not always getting, you know, your premium or big names winning this event. So, you know, it is a little bit of a crapshoot. There's a little bit of a pro-am aspect to it, and a few celebrities that play in this. It's not as big in that aspect as the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am, but that is also part of this tournament. So this isn't necessarily the easiest event to handicap.
No, and one thing I do want to touch on with you here that I found interesting, and I see that Bo Hostler is on your card this week at 50-1, and he's a guy we talked about on yesterday's show. But The thing that really stood out to me, and I understand that recent form is very important, but there are some guys here that played really well last week at the Sony, and it feels like $10, $12, $15 taking off their odds here this week, whereas guys that played really well last year at the tail end or played really well in the Asian swing, they're not getting the price respect that, you know, guys that we've seen recently are. So is the golf market really that knee-jerk in terms of pricing?
It might be early in the year simply because, I mean, you've had some guys that were busy and played in November and a little bit in December. And then you had some guys that, you know, didn't play since somewhere in October. You had, you know, two, three, some months off and didn't really play a lot. I mean, and I agree with you, like somebody like an Andrew Putnam, who I was on last week and finished second. I mean, you know, even though this field's a little bit of a weaker field, a weaker field in terms of depth, he shouldn't be 30-1 here. I mean, you know, so you are seeing a lot of these prices where guys just get caught. I mean, JJ Spahn's a guy I like to play in desert golf, but I wasn't going to play him at less than 50-1. It's one of those things where it's like if you don't bet him and then he goes and wins, then you're like kicking yourself. But I mean, yeah, I thought some of these guys that played pretty well, or some of these new guys from the Web.com tour, you were getting some decent prices on them, like a guy like Anders Albertsen or Denny McCarthy. These are guys that are PGA Tour rookies, but these are guys that played some of those fall swing events, like in Las Vegas and in Mississippi and the RSN, the old RSM in Georgia, that you know, played pretty solid golf. So, and I think you are getting bargains on some of those prices. And this is an event where it never hurts to take a couple long shots on your card.
Wes Reynolds, who's working, and follow on Twitter at Wes Reynolds and the number one. Appreciate the time as always, sir. Thank you so much for joining me, and we'll talk to you again next week.
You bet, Adam. Always a pleasure, sir.